This is Jesse Zurawell and Perspective on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. Riley Wagaman is back with me today, I am happy to say. Riley is an independent journalist who is based in Moscow. Currently, he is on hiatus in the country of Georgia. And he recently published at his Substack, which is edwardslavsquat.substack.com, a four-part series on Vladimir Putin and his involvement in the development of Russia's Sputnik V injection, as well as his involvement in the mandates that have been rolled out throughout Russia with regard to said injection. We're going to talk about the first two parts of the series today, or use them as a basis for our conversation. The first part is titled Putin, Sputnik V, and Mass Vaccination, and the second, Putin and Compulsory Vaccination. That said, Riley, welcome back. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right, Jesse. Thanks so much for having me back. It's always a pleasure talking.
Likewise. So before we dive into these pieces, let me ask you why you decided to write this series. Why is this information important? Why does it need to be in the public arena, so to say?
I think there's two reasons. So first, I had a selfish reason to do it, which is because I write about COVID issues in Russia, sort of my specialty. Basically, what ends up happening a lot on a very regular basis is I will get comments or emails asking me about where Putin fits in all this. And it's just not something that can be easily answered. And it's a topic that really requires a lot of depth, a lot of background. And it's also, frankly, it's an open question. You know, I explained at the beginning of this series that I can't promise definitive answers. I just want to lay out the research I've done on this issue and try to give people the information they need to make their own judgments. The second reason I did it is because I think previous, let's say, alleged attempts to portray Putin's alleged relationship with Sputnik V or how he fits into this experimental genetic shot have really lacked depth. They have been extremely lazily written and researched. They're based on a lot of speculation. And so I just thought maybe it was time to just really go through, like in chronological order, how Putin fits into this. And, you know, how people want to interpret it, it's up to them. And I just I thought it was time to talk about it and write about it.
Yes, absolutely. And I would add to that, just from my perspective, that this is an important examination because, as we've talked about in the past, since February 24th of this year, much has been made about Russia and China leading an emerging multipolar New World Order, fighting globalism. And to me, the litmus test for that is, are these countries going along with the COVID-19 pseudo-pandemic lockstep measures we've all had to live through for the past 2.5 years? And spoiler alert, perhaps, but they are failing said litmus test. But beyond just saying that, I think, as you said, it's very important to go through, in the case of Russia, Putin's involvement methodically and look at where he's been involved, where he hasn't, where his staff have been involved, where they haven't. And as you said, it's quite complicated. In fact, that's one of the subheaders, the subheader of your second piece in this series. But just from my perspective, with all the hullabaloo about this emerging multipolar new world order, it's vital that we examine, really examine, whether or not Russia, China, all the rest of the countries that are allegedly part of this new world order are still in lockstep with the pseudo-pandemic measures. So that said, unless you have a response, let's get into...
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say really quickly that I will be, I hopefully tomorrow, be publishing a part five, which will go into depth about what, so we, you know, the first four parts sort of lay out the background of the issue, and part five is going to be what has happened since February 24th. So you can stay tuned and read about it.
Yes, and I'll say very quickly to add to what I just said that this is not about attacking Putin. It's about getting at the truth as close as we can. It behooves us to question what's being put forth as some sort of paradigm shift for humanity, let's say. We can't just take it at face value and accept the words from Putin, from Xi Jinping, from their subordinates that what is coming is exactly what they say is coming, and that they've thrown off the shackles of the old world order. That would be irresponsible of us to do. This is about questioning power, which I think is our job. It's one of the main aspects of our job, and that's all we are doing here. So, of course, people are going to react saying, this is an attack on Putin, you're singling out Russia. That's not it at all, but if that's the way you're going to take it, then that's the way you're going to take it. Anyhow, let's get into the first piece here, Putin, Sputnik V, and mass vaccination. You ask in the subheader, what role did Russia's president play in Sputnik V's development and deployment? So where do we start in answering this question?
Well, I started at a absolutely fascinating meeting that I didn't even know existed until quite recently that was held on April 20th, 2020. So just to remind everyone, I mean, most parts of the world, I think the sort of COVID lockdowns and restrictions probably started in mid or maybe late March 2020. And that was sort of the case with Russia. I mean, Russia was, Moscow's lockdown was basically the last day of March, if I remember correctly. And so we're talking about less than a month after sort of lockdowns and COVID restrictions started, Putin held this video conference to talk about the, you know, epidemiological situation in Russia, and it's attended by all these senior government officials and medical experts, and the top agenda item is the creation of a COVID vaccine. And he basically says, you know, I really would like your opinion on how quickly we can do this. And, you know, he stresses that it should be done, that safety was paramount and all this stuff. But he basically says, I would like you to, you know, fill me in on how quickly this can be done so that we can start production as soon as possible. What I found absolutely, I was I was honestly stunned when I found this transcript. It's an official transcript. You can find it on the Kremlin website, which I linked to. And several of his medical experts that have been gathered at this meeting are telling Putin that, you know, coronavirus has been greatly, the threat posed by it has been greatly exaggerated, that we, you know, we need to reassess the situation. There's this one, I mean, we can go through it, but in my opinion, one of the craziest or just one of the most shocking comments was from this guy, Dermanov, who was working for the Ministry of Science and Higher Education, like as a sort of biological safety expert. And this is what he said, a direct quote. He says that it would probably be a naive dream to think that a vaccine could be created for the entire Russian population. And then he explains why. He says, our experience with Ebola and with swine flu showed us that we can make a very good vaccine that works well on 90% of the population, but it will kill 10% of the population. And then he says, mm-hmm. as an aside, in this case, mice, thank God, by stimulating this cytokine storm. Is that how you pronounce it? I'm sorry, my medical pronunciation is horrendous. But this is basically
cytokine.
Thank you so much. You know, mm-hmm. which is basically, you know, it's an inflammatory syndrome, and which is an incredible thing to tell Vladimir Putin on April 20th, 2020, isn't it? I mean, I was floored by this. And then you had other, you know, you had another guy who actually plays a very interesting role in Sputnik V's sort of how it was received, I guess you can say, like his review of Sputnik V later on down the road. But this guy, Chuchalin, who, you know, is this academic, he's the president of the Russian Respiratory Society. And most notably, at the time, he was the head of the Russian Health Ministry's Ethics Council. And this guy is saying, look, coronaviruses are really common. And you get them like within the first few months of life, and they stay with you forever. And we should really like rethink what we're doing here. And there were actually a few other comments that were being made that were quite revealing during this meeting. And then, of course,
you note that he spoke out against using ventilators to treat COVID patients as well.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you have these guys who are saying, creating a vaccine for the entire population might not work out that well. And from past experience, it could even be deadly, you know, with judging from our animal tests. Then you have Alexander Ginsberg, who's in the room, who, as anyone who is familiar with Sputnik V, is the director of the Gamaleya Center, which allegedly developed Sputnik V in record time. And Alexander Ginsberg says, we've got this amazing technological genetic platform. We can pump out this drug quite quickly. And we learned during this meeting that has already been directed. He's already been instructed to do this. So he's basically just giving an update on a vaccine that has already been in development. And after Ginsberg speaks, Putin turns to Mikhail Murashko, his health minister, and says, let's make sure that we can speed up and accelerate the registration process for this new COVID vaccine being developed by Ginsberg.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very telling meeting, because first of all, we have evidence that Putin was aware that rushing out a vaccine could be dangerous. We have evidence that Putin was told that maybe Russia's COVID response wasn't even responsible, that maybe we should rethink how we think about COVID. And we also have him receiving this presentation from Ginsberg, the head developer of Sputnik V, and then Putin responding that he wants to accelerate the rollout, the registration and deployment of this experimental shot.
Mm-hmm. Like Operation Warp Speed here in the US. And you have a paragraph that reads, in 2015, the Gamaleya Center created a, quote, technological platform, unquote, that used, quote, virus-like particles, unquote, to deliver genetic material to cells. A genetic injection based on this platform could provide immunity against COVID within 10 to 12 days after being administered, he claimed, he being Ginsberg. This puts me in mind of Moderna and its rollout of its injection, which within a matter of days of the in silico genetic sequence being available on a global scale, Moderna was already producing its manufacturing its so-called vaccine. So it had that platform lying in wait for when it was necessary, quote unquote, to roll it out. Very, very similar what happened here with the Sputnik V injection, again, pointing to this global lockstep aspect of the measures in response to COVID-19, including the injections. So I just wanted to home in on that particular point there. So where do things go from Ginsberg's amazing promise and Putin's acceptance and signing off on it?
Well, I mean, basically, Ginsberg delivered. Actually, originally, if you look at the transcript, he was hoping to have Sputnik V registered by June 15th, which would have been absolutely insane. I mean, it's the way that they pushed this through was already unprecedented, but Ginsberg was really, really going all in, apparently. But anyway, after very, very light testing, which we'll return to momentarily, this drug actually does receive authorization from Russia's health ministry on August 11th of that year. And what is so interesting is that this fellow Chuchalin, who we mentioned before, who was at this meeting with Ginsberg and Putin, who was the head of the Russian ministry's ethics council, resigned a day before Sputnik V received its emergency authorization. And he gave a quote where he says, "It's important for a country to have a vaccine, but when research is being done, the principle of safety comes first. It is impossible to guarantee long-term safety by reducing the testing period to 4 to 6 weeks," which is quite a reasonable. Like, how do you, and that's the mind-melting insanity of 2022, which is, how did we get to a point where people pretend that you can expedite long-term safety trials? How do you do that?
Right. Right. And it's escaping me who pointed it out, but it's akin to saying you can conceive and give birth to a baby in a month instead of 9 months, right? It's something like that. It's essentially turning nature, although I wouldn't exactly call these serums nature, but turning the natural order of things on its head for ostensibly a new and novel and extremely deadly coronavirus, which, as we know now and as a lot of us knew then, was not the case.
Exactly. And, you know, Chuchalin was pointing out, we have no idea, you know, this talk. And of course, this was happening, just to point out, all big pharma was doing the same thing. Everyone was doing the same thing. They were screeching about how their new shots were safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. You know, 95% efficacy, whatever that means, 98%, whatever. Russia was doing the same, just like Pfizer and Moderna and AstraZeneca. And Chuchalin's point was, first of all, you have no idea. How can you possibly gauge the efficacy of something that you've only tested for at most like a little more than a month, you know, less than 2 months? Mm-hmm. And secondly, just the safety profile, you have absolutely zero idea. And of course, he was right on both points. And we've talked about this before, but the famous example is Ginsburg saying in April 2021 that Sputnik V would give indefinite immunity, would provide indefinite immunity. And then exactly a year later saying you have to get revaccinated every 6 months and encouraging people to get two doses at the same time.
Right. Right. Which we talked about in a previous conversation.
Yeah.
I also want to point out too that Ginsburg's, and you point this out in this first edition, this first installment, Ginsburg's so-called technological platform had yet to produce a single drug approved for use outside of Russia. And again, that puts me very much in mind of Moderna, which had failed to bring any drug to market before its COVID-19 injection. So another Moderna parallel there.
Totally unproven platform. Tested on maybe if you count up all of the different drugs they allegedly tried this on, we're talking about easily less than 5,000 people total over. It's shocking how untested it actually was before, it was used to pump out this incredibly bizarre and, mysterious experimental genetic injection.
Mm-hmm. So where to from there then? This was rolled out in August of 2020, correct?
Yep.
And what was the uptake like, and what were the directives to the public coming from Putin and his administration?
Well, I think in general, in the first few months, it was enthusiasm for Sputnik V was, let's say, wasn't exactly overwhelming. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I can say that just from my knowledge of what happened in Moscow specifically, I mean, we're talking about a situation where before Moscow had compulsory vaccination, I think it was something like, I want to say maybe somewhere between 1.5, 1.8 million Muscovites had received at least one dose. And after the compulsory vaccination came into force in June 2021, they like doubled that in a month or 2 months, or like month and a half. So we're talking about a very large proportion of Russia's vaccine uptake was through coercion, was through basically saying you take this shot or you lose your job. And we're sort of getting ahead of ourselves, but the rest of this sort of first installment, it's literally a chronology of Putin's statements about how apparently passionate he was about Russians getting the shot, and he says it again and again and again at every possible opportunity.
Right. So if I can,
vaccination is the only way. Yeah.
If I can back up a small bit, you write, Ginsburg also thanked Putin for issuing a directive allowing Gamaleya to conduct, quote, clinical trials in parallel with preclinical studies, unquote, explaining this decision would, quote, speed up, unquote, the vaccine's development. Putin expressed satisfaction with Ginsburg's presentation and ordered Russia's health minister to ensure Gamaleya's COVID vaccine wouldn't be bogged down by unnecessary red tape.
Which, by the way, if you doubt my interpretation, all you have to do is read the official Kremlin transcript. It's all there. It's all there. Yeah. Yeah, so it is frightening, and it's frightening because Putin, after this, started hailing the safety and efficacy of a vaccine that he pushed through and has absolutely no idea if it's safe or effective,
Right. And we can only speculate as to why he did that, we can't get inside his head, and I don't want to try to do that because it's pure speculation and I would say irresponsible. But the actions are there and the words are there for everyone to see. And it's no different than what was being done in the US, what was being done in the UK, what was being done in Europe, what was being done in China as well. So Russia under Putin, the state apparatus was, and as we'll get to later, perhaps on Friday when we'll be having part two of this discussion, still is very much on board with the COVID-19 response regime we've all become uncomfortably familiar with over the past 2.5 years. We need to throw it to a quick break, but when we get back, I want to pick up on this and delve more into what you found in the rest of your first installment and in your second installment. So everybody hang tight, and I'll be back with Riley Wagaman here on TNT Radio after this.
You should hear what Hescher is talking about.
It's called the Fauci effect. Trust me, I don't get excited about that. I mean, it's nice, but I mean, it's people go to medical school now. People are interested in science, not because of me, because most people don't know me, who I am. My friends know me, my wife knows me, but people don't know me. It's what I symbolize. And what I symbolize in an era of the normalization of untruths and lies and all the things you're seeing going on in society from January 6th to everything else that goes on, people, the craving for consistency, for integrity, for truth, and for people caring about people.
You gotta love that. Is that not amazing? He symbolizes truth in an era of untruth and lies. Are you kidding me? The gall of this guy. Does he really believe this trash coming out of his mouth? You gotta wonder. And he says from, you know, he's trying to talk about lies and untruths, you know, from J6 to everything else. Does everything else also include the absolute decimation of our economy? Does everything else include the rises in violent crimes, assault, suicide, drug abuse, all that stuff, which can much of it largely be tied to people's reaction to the government's reaction to the pandemic?
Brian McLean on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, Gemma Simon here from the Newcastle Jets for RAD. Playing any sport means setting the right example. And it's not just about how players focus and behave when they're on the field. It's also about their actions and behaviours off it. That includes things like drink driving, drug driving, and driver distractions. No one can perform properly if they're under the influence or distracted. So make sure you make the right decisions when it comes to getting behind the wheel of a car, and you'll definitely earn respect for it.
A message from RAD.
I've got muscular dystrophy. That means my muscles are weak and it can be hard to breathe. During COVID-19, kids like me are at a greater risk. But the Muscular Dystrophy Association is here to help.
MDA is what ensures they receive critical medical care at one of over 150 care centers.
COVID-19 won't stop us. Please visit helpmda.org.
Where progress is influenced by revolution and evolution. This is today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
TNT.
Welcome back to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zerwell, joined by Riley Wagaman here on TNT, where, just as a reminder, we are live 24/7. You can find us on your preferred streaming app or download app if you want to listen to back episodes. We're on Apple, we're on Google Play, we're on Spotify. You can also find us online at Odyssey, Rumble, YouTube, if you dare tread there. And of course, you can download the TNT Radio app or find us at our website, tntradio.live, where you can listen live, listen to back episodes, if that's what you so desire. Riley and I are speaking about the Sputnik V injection, Russia's version of a COVID-19 vaccine in inverted commas, and Putin's involvement in the development and rollout of this serum. So after it was rolled out, Riley, increasingly Putin would make statements promoting it. And he also pointed out that the so-called vaccines in other countries were having safety problems, to put it mildly. So as TASS reported on March 4, 2021, and this is quoting from your piece, Putin noted that the level of patient protection when vaccinated with AstraZeneca is 63%, while the Sputnik V vaccine shows an efficiency level of 91.6%. Remember, we're talking about relative efficacy here, not absolute. So these percentages are dramatically lower when you get into the absolute form, which is the form that should be used, but is not, because inflating the percentages is what this game is all about. The president also mentioned several deaths after the use of the Pfizer vaccine. Quote, "Thank God, we don't have a single case of severe side effects. 10% may have a fever on the second day, but the level of protection and safety is high," unquote, he added. So what's staggering to me about this particular quote is that he calls out AstraZeneca, which worked in concert with Sputnik V in its development. So he's calling out an entity that was intimately involved in developing Sputnik V to point out Sputnik V's supposed excellent track record.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's so difficult to, I guess you sort of have to speculate why he would do this. But, you know, on the one hand, it's like, is this just smoke and mirrors, right? Is it just this idea where we will talk about, you know, the sketchy science of the West so that, you know, I don't have to talk about the sketchy science in Russia? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I don't know, Putin chaired a meeting between the AstraZeneca CEO, Russia's R-Pharm pharmaceutical company, Gamaleya Center, and the Russia Direct Investment Fund, where he wished AstraZeneca's CEO, like, good luck in foreign markets, including Russia. This happened mm-hmm. December 2020, just a few months before he said this. So it's right. It's so, you know, it's almost like a form of gaslighting, because you don't want to make assumptions when you read stuff like this. You want to assume that he's saying these things, whether, you know, I mean, I would argue that it's impossible to say that we haven't had a single case of severe side effects when you don't have a post-vaccination, you know, record system in Russia that's publicly available. So how would he know that?
Right.
But you want to assume the default assumption, or, you know, the hope is that Putin is not trying to, you know, he's not trying to gaslight us. He's being genuine. But how does this work? Like, what's the logic here? Like, what's the logical? I just can't follow it, you know? And that's another. Right. I think if you read my pieces, it's sort of this situation, like I said in the second part, it's like, what is Putin's stance on compulsory vaccination is complicated, because Putin is all over the place.
Yes.
Like every other day, he's saying something that totally contradicts what he said a week before.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And to me, it's either one of two approaches. Either he doesn't really know and he's speaking and acting as best he can with the knowledge base he has, or he does know and he's gaslighting. I don't think there are any other options there. And again, we can only speculate as to which one it is, but given what we know about Putin, he's an intelligent man. He is well-educated, seems very calculated and meticulous. So I would hazard the guess or the assumption that he knows very well what he's saying and what he's doing. Now, again, I can't prove that because I'm not inside his head or privy to the preparations he undertakes before he makes these statements. But as here in the US, where we saw a very similar all over the place with regard to masking in particular, I find it hard to believe that this is incompetence as opposed to some other purposeful motivation. Now, I don't want to attribute it to malice because I have no proof for that. Here in the US, yes, I can point to proof of that. But with Sputnik V, it's a little more complicated. Although we can look at things like, as you point out, in January 2022, Russian authorities shut down a website that tracked suspected vaccine-linked deaths in the country. Why do that? Why hide that information?
Yeah, you know, one sort of criticism that I've received from my reporting is like, you're misrepresenting Russia's vaccine safety system. It's just that it's not that they're trying to hide post-vaccination complications. They just haven't developed a system yet. They're not trying to, they want to be transparent. They just don't have the technology yet. So, all right, well, if that's the case, like, why wouldn't you fully support any citizen, grassroots citizen initiative to point out to the Russian health ministry when there's a problem with the medication that later on Russia began coercing into arms? And they did the exact opposite. They closed down websites. They threatened doctors who spoke out about a suspected adverse events. I mean, it's just, I don't know how someone can defend this kind of behavior. I mean, it's really gross. It's very, very disheartening.
Yes, I agree. And not to get into another conversation, but I'll quickly say, as I've noted in the past, that type of interpretation or analysis suggests to me that people want to see some sort of savior in Putin and not think him capable of malice, not think him capable of the same behavior that we know other nation state leaders in the world and the handlers above them are absolutely capable of. But I will leave it at that. And I want to, the end of your first piece gets into Putin's stance on mass so-called vaccination and compulsory vaccination. And that transitions into your second piece, Putin and compulsory vaccination. What is the Russian president's stance on coercive injections? It's complicated. So why is it so complicated?
It's complicated because within the first few months of Russia's mass vaccination drive, which began fully voluntary, what ended up happening, Putin came out. It came out in end of May and said, look, I think that forcing the vaccine on people would be counterproductive and just not a realistic thing to do. It's going to cause more problems than you know, more negatives than positives here. Mm-hmm. That Russians should realize the need for vaccination. And the, you know, this was unambiguous.
This was in May of 2021, just to clarify.
Yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes. So the mass vaccination campaign really started in January of that year. So in my opinion, this was pretty unambiguous. Okay, he's still supporting vaccination. He's saying basically it's the only way out of this pandemic. He's saying people should realize the need for it. But he's saying it shouldn't be forced. It's counterproductive. It's not going to do what, you know, needs to be. It's not the way to do it. And, you know, within a month, we start seeing really mixed signals from the Kremlin. What ended up happening was basically less than a month later, in mid-June, Moscow came out with Russia's first compulsory vaccination policy. And you had a situation where the Kremlin was playing this really weird game where, on the one hand, Putin would publicly talk about how he was still opposed to compulsory vaccination. And then his spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, would come out and say, this is a great, like, this is an absolutely correct step in the right direction, while claiming that it's his personal opinion. And, mm-hmm. you know, and then there's this amazing quote that I got to read. It's incredible. He says, this is what Peskov says on January 17th, which is a day after this compulsory decree in Moscow was released. And he says, the principle of vaccination not being obligatory generally remains, but we are not very active in getting vaccinated. So I consider such emergency measures absolutely necessary and justified. It's like, what is going on here? What kind of mind games, these insane mental gymnastics where you can say something like, the principle of voluntary vaccination still remains. The problem, though, is that nobody wants to voluntarily get vaccinated. So, you know, we've made some adjustments. It's just so cynical.
And you point that out in this piece as well, that Russians were not very keen on putting this chemical agent into their bodies.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no question that especially if you're comparing Russia to other European states or the United States or Canada, Russia's uptake of this vaccine was extremely low before they started using coercive methods. I mean, again, I wish I had the numbers directly in front of me, but I believe that before the coercive policy started in June, and then they really went crazy with it in autumn of 2021, September, October, late September, October, November. I mean, it had to be less than 30%. Of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and you know, the piece really goes into quite a lot of detail about these sort of weird twists and turns and how Putin is presenting his position on compulsory vaccination. And again, to be very clear, I am not pretending that I have an absolute conclusion about where Putin stands on compulsory vaccination or whether he's directly responsible for these policies. But there is no way that you can actually objectively look at this totally weird labyrinthine, like, mind. I don't even know what to describe it. It's like a total mind fuck where Putin, like, leads you down this into this dark forest where you don't know what the hell's going on. Because one day he's saying, I totally oppose, I think it's wrong to force you know, people to get vaccinated to work. And then the next day, he's applauding Sergei Sobyanin, the mayor of Moscow, for imposing for his COVID measures, which were the strictest and most coercive and backwards and anti-human in all of Russia. And he does this mm-hmm. just in a period of a few weeks. And he just goes back and forth and back and forth. And he even issues decrees where he says, he issues recommendations to the regions where he says, if you're over 60 and you're not vaccinated, you have to self-isolate in home. You're under house arrest because you weren't vaccinated. So how do you issue that recommendation if you claim that you think that compulsory vaccination is counterproductive and wrong?
Right. Right. And people really have to read this piece, all of them, all four of them, and the forthcoming fifth one. But this one in particular gives such a crystal clear picture of how, as you say, labyrinthine the public statements of Putin and Peskov and others in the health ministry were, literally changing from one day to the next. So, for example, sometimes a little longer than one day to the next, but in a so-called direct line event held on June 30 of 2021, Putin spoke with a Moscow resident whose wife was facing dismissal from work, even though she had a medical condition exempting her from the city's compulsory vaccination decree. And Putin's response was, It's illegal. If there is a medical exemption, no one has the right to demand vaccination. He goes on to say a bit more in that vein. He also restated his opposition to mandatory vaccination. And then speaking on August 22 of the same year, 2021, Putin described vaccination as, quote, the best tool we have, unquote, to, quote, overcome the pandemic, unquote, but said it should not be imposed on the public. The need for vaccination should be explained, Russia's leader said, adding it was, quote, necessary to create different kinds of incentives, unquote, to increase uptake. 2 days later, Putin expressed opposition to tying vaccination status to employment. So just right there, you get a glimpse of, in a matter of weeks, let's say, how this message is all over the place. And it's no wonder that uptake among Russian citizens was so low. Who could possibly make an informed decision based on these statements coming out of the head of state?
Yeah, and then, you know, my report ends with Putin's involvement or positions and views on this highly controversial, extremely unpopular national digital health pass legislation that came to Russia in mid-November. So all the regions adopted their own QR code systems for, you know, discriminating on vaccination or PCR positive status. And then, you know, at the federal level, they decided they wanted their own federal health pass, if you want to call it that. And it's very, very interesting that this legislation, which received absolutely enormous grassroots pushback, it was something like the Telegram channel of the chairman of the State Duma received around 700,000 almost entirely negative comments on his Telegram channel over a period of like 2 days, 700,000. Mm-hmm. And anyway, in this bill, it was languishing in sort of the State Duma and in the regional Dumas. They didn't know what to do. And near towards the end of December of 2021, December 17th, Putin comes out and he publicly says that, this is what he says, I cannot, he's speaking about, you know, this code, and he says, I cannot end on the note expected by certain social organizations and figures, taking into account both the moral motivations and the duties of my office, saying that the QR codes were necessary, you know, due to the continuing complications posed by coronavirus. So he's basically saying, I understand that a bunch of organizations and activists want me to oppose QR codes. I can't do that because I have a moral duty tied to my office to protect Russians against coronavirus And I think that QR codes are the right thing to do. That is, that's what he said publicly.
Right.
In TOS, you can read it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another problem that I have. Again, I'm not trying to force my views on anyone. I wrote this four-part series just because I think someone needed to do it. And by the way, it took me a really long time. It took an absolutely enormous amount of research to pull this together. And I did it just because people were actually claiming that Putin opposed QR codes in Russia, which, okay, is your personal opinion, but show me the evidence. And I looked for it. I really, really looked for it. I mean, I went through all the TOS archives for 2 years. I went through all the RIA Novosti's. I went through all the news items in Russia's official COVID portal. I couldn't find anything that would suggest that Putin was fighting this secret war behind the scenes to stop COVID tyranny. Quite the opposite. And on almost every issue, on almost every single issue that's related to COVID, whether it's QR codes or vaccination or masks or testing, he's absolutely, you cannot distinguish many of his statements from, you know, the garbage coming out of Trudeau's mouth or whoever. This is just the reality. It's just the objective reality.
Right. It absolutely is. And these articles, these pieces are heavily cited. And I took the time, and I think everybody who reads these pieces should take the time to look at the links themselves to see that these words were indeed said. And it's interesting to note, when you step back and take the 30,000 foot view of the labyrinthine nature of the statements coming from Putin, coming from Peskov, that even though they're labyrinthine, they get more and more authoritarian as the labyrinth sort of does its serpentine move throughout the year of 2021, ending with the imposition of these QR codes. And I believe Moscow Mayor Sergei Sobyanin saying that, in addition, a line should be drawn between the vaccinated, that is people with QR codes, and the unvaccinated. They need to be sharply distinguished.
That was Ginsburg.
Ginsburg.
But the reason I bring that up is because Ginsburg gave this insane interview with Russian media where he, exactly as you quoted him, he said that he basically called for discrimination based on vaccination status. Within 24 hours, he was at the Kremlin receiving one of Russia's highest honors, the Order of Alexander Nevsky, from Putin for his amazing work in science. And it's just like, okay, look, maybe, look, I really am open. I am truly, honestly open to hearing the Putin is actually doing his best not to call the Russians like maybe other leaders are calling their own populations with this ridiculous COVID stuff. I am open to that argument, but I don't understand why. Why would you voluntarily choose to give the dude who developed the unproven genetic slurry that's being pushed on your population one of your country's highest honors after he called for open discrimination against the unvaccinated? Why would you do that?
Right.
I don't know.
It's,
I don't know the answer to that.
Right. And it's either ineptitude or it's being done willfully. And we've heard so many people talk about how when Russian statesmen speak, they mean what they say and their actions are very deliberate. So if that's true, then that applies to this, and this sort of mindfuckery, as you put it, is being deliberately perpetrated on the Russian public, if we're to take that assessment of how these people, these officials operate, as true. So And again, this relates to the larger picture of where Russia and China stand now with regard to globalism. And to me, this is very clear evidence, and we'll get into further, more present evidence that they are still very much in the globalist camp. On foreign policy, I would even argue the camp of empire. But on Friday, we'll get into part three and four. Part three, Putin's views on the WHO, Big Pharma, and the, quote, international fight, unquote, against COVID. We'll get into the global aspect of this. But until then, Riley, thank you again for joining me, for writing these pieces, for laying out the truth here. And I look forward to speaking again.
Thanks for having me, Jesse. It was great talking, man.